Ghoulish greetings, my friends. The tunes are courtesy of the amazing Bobby Mackey and Stick the Landing, and I'm your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't buy the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
First of all, a very happy St. Patrick's Day to every single one of you. Hoping you have a phenomenal day. We always enjoy a green beer in this home and a lovely dinner of corned beef with mushrooms and carrots and potatoes and onions. And as I'm talking about this, I'm getting very, very hungry. So I'll stop right now. Now, thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift. Whenever you listen, and wherever you are listening from coastal town where you can hear the waves from your doorsteps, to desolate desert where the cactus is as tall as they come, and where the coyotes are thou neighbor. From cozy mountain town to the cities that, hello, never sleep, and everything in between, it is greatly appreciated. This week's special city shoutouts go to Frankfort, Illinois, Rexburg, Idaho, Ankara, Turkey, Cheltenham, England, Brandenburg, Kentucky, and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Today we find ourselves in Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. It's the largest hand-cut stone masonry structure in North America. That's quite impressive in my book. It's located in Weston, West Virginia, and construction begins in 1858, but believe it or not, it would not be completely finished until 1881. Now, of course, they didn't open their doors in 1881, even though it was still under construction. They opened to the public in late 1864, just before the end of the Civil War. Trans-Allegheny is pretty self-sufficient, as they had a dairy, a farm, a gas well, their own water system, and yes, of course, a cemetery. In 1913, they changed the name to Weston State Hospital. Now, originally, this institute was built with having 250 patients in mind, which, in my opinion, whoever came up with that number should have been in the lunatic asylum themselves. I'm really shocked to hear that. 250 is a very small number. When almost every single asylum episode that I've done, whether it be in the United States or another country, one thing that is for certain, besides the unfortunate mistreatment of the patients / inmates, it's the overcrowding issue. Every asylum episode, I talk about this, and it's a huge thing. And of course, they don't turn people away saying, "Sorry, sweetheart, hit the bricks, we have no room for you." No, they accommodate them. But it's putting everybody else out, including the new person who just arrived. That's when things get sloppy. That's when things get abusive. And really, it's not fair to anybody. The patient themselves are there with hopes of getting better, seeing better days, possibly being reunited with family and not having to call an asylum their home. And the staff, probably for 250 people only. And then they have to see extra people, take care of them, stress levels rise, they're not doing their jobs correctly or accurately, things happen, and again, just not good. Especially with the fact that back then, it didn't take much at all to have somebody committed. Whether the person was just an inconvenience to the family, and they just wanted them out, menstrual problems, not being able to read, reading too much, guilty, not giving enough meat to your husband for dinner, and other goofy so-called offenses was enough to get a person committed. No wonder there was huge overcrowding issues. So again, Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum is only built for 250, but that's mere pocket change compared to the numbers they actually saw. By 1880, remember, this is before construction was even completely done, they had over 700 patients. In 1938, there were 1,661 patients. In 1949, well over 1,800. And the highest peak proves to be in the 1950s with a whopping 2,600 patients. It was during this time that they were conducting the West Virginia Lobotomy Project. I found an interesting and, I will admit, disturbing article on WestVirginiaEncyclopedia.org. That's WVEncyclopedia.org. And it talks about an American neurologist named Walter Freeman. And he basically introduced lobotomies to the United States. And I just want to read a little part of that right now. Quote, between 1952 and 1955, 787 West Virginians were lobotomized at the four state mental hospitals of the era, Huntington, Spencer, Lacon, and Weston. Freeman traveled back and forth from Washington to do most or perhaps all of them. More than 100 persons had had the surgery before 1952, meaning approximately 900 state residents in total endured the procedure, the largest number of per capita of any U.S. state. Many of the patients never consented to the surgery. The procedure's effectiveness was undoubtful. Despite Freeman's claims to the contrary, lobotomy was palliative, sometimes making otherwise uncontrollable patients docile to the point that they could be released from the hospital, but with corresponding blunting of volition, abstraction, and personality. The introduction of psychotropic medications in the mid-1950s, plus longitudinal studies disputing the claims of the operation's success, led to the end of the West Virginia Lobotomy Project in 1955, unquote. In the very same article I just read from, they talk a little bit about the transorbital lobotomy. And I know I've talked about lobotomies in other, you guessed it, asylum episodes, right? That's where they were always conducted, it seems. And I want to read just a little more about that. Quote, the transorbital technique involved entering the brain from the front by inserting an orbitoclast, similar to an ice pick, under the upper eyelid, wrapping it sharply with a mallet to break through the skull into the brain cavity, and moving it back and forth to separate the connections between the thinking and emotional areas of the brain. Unquote. Okay, I'm sorry, but this is absolutely barbaric, in my opinion. I mean, how did they think? How was there an ounce of thought in their mind that they thought that this could help anybody? No wonder they were easily controlled after this happened. I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer's victims were easily controlled when he was drilling holes in their brains. They were zombies at this point. I mean, you might as well have just introduced the firing squad to these poor people because they would have been better off. And speaking of, it makes me wonder how many people died from these so-called lobotomy treatments. This horrific practice. Moving on to something new, Trans-Allegheny is placed in the National Register of Historic Locations in 1990. 4 years later, that being 1994, they do close down. Now naturally, with it being so heavily overcrowded, and the fact that not many people were often released from these types of places, it is no shocker that this asylum has seen its fair share of deaths, my friends. The Charleston Gazette newspaper shares a heartbreaking case back in September 29th of 1992. Titled, Weston Patient Dies After Fight, Second Death Within a Month. This article is written by staff writer Dawn Miller, and she wrote this. Quote, a patient at Weston State Hospital died Sunday night after a fight with another patient who was charged with murder 5 years ago, according to state police in Lewis County. This was the second death at the mental hospital within a month. George Edward Bodie, 46, of Parkersburg, received several injuries during a late-night fight and died, apparently as a result of those injuries, said Sergeant B.B. Flanagan of the West End Detachment of the State Police. There were no weapons involved in the fight, he said. According to police, David Michael Mason, remember that name, my friends, okay? David Michael Mason, 29, of Moundsville, also a patient at the mental hospital, tried to choke Bodie with his hands during a fight at about 11:30 p.m. on a third-floor ward. Charges against Mason were pending until an autopsy is done, and police talked to the Lewis County prosecutor, said Trooper R.W. Heyer of the Sutton Detachment. In 1987, Mason and another man were charged with first-degree murder in the death of Dean Metheny, 49, and with the malicious wounding of Raymond Diller at the same time. They were declared incompetent to stand trial in 1988. Dr. Carol Boyd, a medical examiner in Morgantown, examined the body but would not answer questions Tuesday afternoon, the secretary said. Heyer said he had talked to Mason but still didn't know what the fight was about or how it started. Mason remained at the mental hospital and was being watched Sunday night.
I'm not so sure it was too much of a fight, really. There was a struggle, but they weren't standing fist-to-fist fighting,
Heyer said. Earlier this month, a guard found the badly decomposed body of Brian Scott B., a 21-year-old patient who had disappeared 8 days before. Authorities at the time suspected the death was a suicide. In September of 1987, another patient at the 250-bed hospital is killed. Mental health advocate David Geddes said he and his consumer group are concerned about so many deaths, unquote. It's very heartbreaking indeed, and it's just weird to me that somebody just vanishes. You know, this is an asylum, you should know where everybody is, and maybe if you only had 250 people, you might just know. But with thousands wandering around, right, I assume that it could be pretty, like a circus, pretty chaotic. So this person must have been missing, again, for 8 days, and they find the very badly decomposed body must have been somewhere where they usually don't go. Either that or maybe it was, like, very cold out and it, like, kind of helped preserve the body. But, I mean, you would think that decomp, you would smell that rank smell of decomposition, which would have filled the air. Now, ancientfaces.com talks about a haunting murder that took place, and I mentioned him already. The culprit behind this is, yeah, you guessed it, David Mason, and this is about Metheny's murder, and it's notoriously known as the Bedpost Murder. And again, I quote ancientfaces.com, quote, in the 1940 federal census, Dean was 2 years old and living with his grandfather and parents in Grant, West Virginia. His grandfather, Russell, was the head of the household and worked as a carpenter. Also in the home were siblings Mary, Patricia, and Joan. Dean's father, Lewis, worked as a farmer at the time. Dean was mute and had an intellectual disability, which caused him to act like a young child and occasionally become aggressive. He lived at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, which later became known as the Weston State Hospital, that operated from 1864 until 1994. Some rather horrific stories and documentation show that treatment of the patients was particularly cruel. Dean lost his life in what would be known as the Bedpost Murder in 1987. He was a patient in Ward F, which housed the most violent patients. After coloring for most of the day under nurse supervision, he found himself alone with 25-year-old David Mason and 30-year-old James Woods, unquote. Now, okay, I have to stop reading for a second. I mean, again, David Mason. I just mentioned him being the murderer for George Edward Bodie in 1992, and 5 years earlier, this is the murder that we're going to be talking about that took place in 1987. And when you hear what he did to this poor man, Dean Metheny, You're going to wonder, like me, why he didn't spend the rest of his days in a jail cell. I mean, people like this, if they are not going to be contained in either in solitaire or a prison cell for the rest of their days, and if they are going to a mental institute, they need to be away from the general population. This is just insane. No pun intended. I mean, if this was the case, then Bodhi may still be alive today. Now, I'm going to continue reading this article. Quote, "The two hung Dean with a bed sheet, repeatedly raising and lowering him, brutally beating Dean in between being raised and lowered. Both men were later charged with murder, but never tried as they were deemed incompetent to stand trial," unquote. AncientFaces.com goes into more detail when it comes to the murder of Dean Metheny. And I want to warn everybody that what I'm going to read next, it gets very graphic and disturbing. And some may find extremely inappropriate and not want to hear this. Quote, "One of the most tragic and infamous deaths at Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was the bedpost murder that happened in the 1980s in Ward F, which housed the most violent patients. Dean Metheny was a mute man with severe intellectual disabilities that led to childlike behavior and occasional violent outbursts. Metheny spent most of the day innocently coloring with one of the nurses before leaving to one of the more secluded rooms of the ward. It is here that 25-year-old David Mason and 30-year-old James Woods decided to end Metheny's life. For no apparent reason at all, Mason and Woods snuck up behind Metheny, wrapped a bedsheet around his neck, and strung him up on a pipe that went across the ceiling of the room. However, they did not have the strength to keep Metheny suspended in the air long enough for his demise, so they decided to improvise. One of the barbarians held Metheny down while the other grabbed a nearby bed frame, positioned it over Metheny's head with the post on his temple, and then the killer stomped down on the other side of the post, forcing it to propel through Metheny's skull. This horrible tragedy is just one of the many brutal deaths that occurred within the stone walls of Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum," unquote. It seems like he was in the asylum because he was mute, and he would have these occasional outbursts, probably because he was so frustrated that people, he couldn't even talk with his own family or understand them. I mean, anybody would be upset about that, right? And, I mean, unfortunately, he ended up in a room with two murderous men, one, at least, who was already there for some pretty horrific things. So you would think that years later, David Mason should not have the opportunity to murder another human being. It's no secret that Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum is believed to be severely haunted. It has been featured on several shows throughout the years, such as Destination Fear, Ghost Hunters, Portals to Hell, Paranormal Lockdown, Destination America, and Ghost Adventures. Now, on a side note, when it comes to Ghost Adventures, I know I say that I don't watch the show, and I don't. But I've always liked Aaron. Always got in his stuff. I have like a big step in Beanie, and I've always supported his company. And I just want to say that I am so sorry to hear what he's going through right now with his wife. I mean, hiring a hitman to take you out. I'm so glad that it did not happen. I'm glad that he is safe. I hope she rots in prison because she does not deserve to be a free woman. So again, my thoughts are with Aaron at this time. So anyways, one well-known and much-loved spirit that resides here at the asylum is a sweet little girl lovingly known as Lily. She's born to a patient here at the Lunatic Asylum, and this sadly would be her home, asylum. You know, this asylums are no place for a child, that's for sure. Women who are locked up and have babies, I imagine either the state takes the baby, or if the woman has a family, that family takes the baby. The baby doesn't do the time with the mother in prison or jail. It is a crying shame that back then, if a baby is born into an asylum, hey, that's their home. They're serving time there as well. Doomed from the very start, which really makes no sense to me. I mean, even if the family of the person didn't want the baby, there's so many people who want babies who can't have them, or put them in the orphanage or something. But anything's better, I think, than an asylum. Now, I know in a lot of cases, these patients, they were raped by other patients or even the staff, which, you know, is such a horrific breach when it comes to trust. So back to Lily, I'm sad to report that she actually lived here and she died here at a really young age due to pneumonia. And it is known fact that she has been known to throw toys at people, not aggressively, mind you. I mean, it's more like a, hey, I'm here and I want to play with you type of thing. People have been known to bring gifts and offerings to little Lily, including things like toys and coins, candy, and what have you. Someone shared that they had received an EVP of a little girl telling them thank you after they gave her candy. And now I want to read a couple of inserts from my first book, Paranormal Prowlers, I'm Always With You, as in my Tales from Another chapter, which is one of my favorite chapters, by the way. People, in this case, two family members, you know, sharing stuff that happened while they visited the lunatic asylum. So I quote my first one, which is my sweet aunt, Rosalie. And here's what she shared with me. Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, I can't even describe it. There are four floors. They are renovating part of it to make it look fancy with antiques. I prefer to stay the way it is. I don't know if the spirits that are there like that they are changing it a lot. There is so much going on there. We had a guy that was so good that we asked for him again. This guy was so excited. He is just obsessed with this asylum. He's had paranormal experiences there, and I don't even know where to start. Many times we'd be sitting on the floor in the dark waiting for something to happen. Then we'd get up. Another couple was with us as well. It was pitch black. You can't even see your hands in front of your face. This one guy that was with us, along with his girlfriend, said, I'm going to walk down that hall right now and you all watch me. So we all watch him. He has a flashlight and he's just walking along when all of a sudden the door slammed. It was so loud it shook. I thought he was going to have a heart attack because that's where he was walking towards. That was one huge thing. Then when we listened to my grandson Nick's recorder, we heard more things than what we heard with our ears. Civil War soldiers bunked on this one floor and they had a big kitchen and we sat there for a while and I walked into the kitchen and it's quite big. It was about 2 blocks long. I went in there by myself and Nick kept saying,
Mima, are you going to go in there by yourself?
And I told him, yes, I'm not afraid. I kept being drawn to that place. We didn't hear anything then. And then when we heard the recorder, you could hear somebody walking with heavy boots, just a big stride going boom, 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 boom. We caught that on recorder. There's a little girl there and her name is Lily. There's a room that she has. There are toys and other things there left for her. So we went into Lily's room. Nick and I had our little flashlights. Nick was sitting in the middle of the floor and something nicked his leg. We couldn't tell what it was. I mean, there was stuff on the floor. We tried to replicate the sound and figured out that it might have been a crayon that was thrown at him. Whenever we see a penny, we think that it's my mom. So we went in there and there was no penny around. And all of a sudden, a penny is found by Nick's leg. Then on the recorder, we heard a little girl who we think to be Lily saying, okay. She had a sweet little voice, as clear as a bell. Her story. So this asylum housed some of the most vicious criminals and the insane. They would kill each other and beat each other up. The guards or the caretakers wouldn't even go because they were afraid of these guys. I mean, so many horrible things happened there. Killings, beatings, rapes, people getting hurt, children born there because these women would get pregnant by rape. And Lily is a product of that. They say she's looking for her mother, which is so incredibly sad to me. There was another woman, I think her name was Mary Ruth. Now, evidently, she was born at the asylum, and they put her in a foster home until she was 18. She ended up coming back, worked here for 72 years at the asylum, then they fixed a special room for her, and she died when she was 92 years old. There are so many things going on at this asylum that I can't even begin to tell you. Then they have these drawings of people, and they had a doctor there that did lobotomies, and there was a section for this. They actually stuck an ice pick in the frontal bone of your eye, then they pounded the ice pick in. There's also a morgue on the property. The property itself is 26 acres. Again, that was from Rosalie. And this other person is Nick, the person that she mentioned before, her grandson, my cousin. And so this is what he had to say about the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Quote, "So I originally found out about this place last October when I was out in West Virginia for a business trip. And at this point, I hadn't moved out there yet. One of my co-workers told me about this place, Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. I drove down there one day after work, and they were doing 30-minute flashlight tours. It's a half-historical tour, half-paranormal tour. And they tell you the history of the place, and it's a quick walkthrough of only one floor. Even in that 30 minutes, we heard footsteps, and we heard a little girl laughing. After that, I was like, okay, I got to come back here. So once Lori and I moved out here, we went on a 2-hour tour from 10 p.m. to midnight. Then just this last weekend, I went on the overnight tour with my grandma, brother, and sister. We had so many little things that were happening, I don't even know where to start. I guess where to start is on the fourth floor. Well, let me give you some history first. It was a mental hospital for the insane during the Civil War. So the Civil War soldiers, they built the asylum. It's a big Gothic-style asylum, and the conditions there were just so brutal. It was built to house 250 patients, and I think by the 1920s, there were well over 250,000 patients there. Murder, suicide, the whole nine. They did lobotomies there. So the way the overnight tour went, it was an 8-hour tour. There's 4 floors, and we got 2 hours on each floor. The first 15 to 20 minutes is the guide walking you around, talking about the hot spots. This is what happened here, and oh, this is what happened there. And then you get a little more than an hour and a half on each floor to roam around on your own, conduct your own investigations. And it's funny because we had 10 people in our group, and after 20 minutes on each floor, they would just go outside and smoke cigarettes. So it was basically 4 people, me, Mima, and my siblings, and then a couple with us. So it was really just us 6 the entire night on our own. This place, this building, if you haven't seen it before, you really need to check it out. It's huge. Just the main building itself has 9 acres of floor space. The 4th floor was the alcohol and addiction rehab center. We are sitting in the middle of the floor of the 4th floor hallway, and this couple had the spirit box. They were doing a session, and we were just sitting down with them, and this guy, Carl, he was walking down the hallway, and his girlfriend or wife or whatever she was to him said, "If you want him to stop, make a loud noise." And nothing happened. He was continuing to walk. He got to the middle hallway, turned back, and started walking back toward us. And as he turned, the door right behind him slammed shut. Like, it was so incredibly loud, it shook the entire floor. No kidding. It startled all of us. We went down there, nobody was there, no wind, nothing at all, no reason for that door to close. It slammed really hard. Then on the 4th floor, we constantly heard footsteps, creaks, and all sorts of different noises. Then on the 1st floor was Lily's room, a little girl that was in the children's ward. The story behind Lily, she was born here. She roams the hallways looking for her mom. She tugs on women's dresses. We were sitting in her room where there were a bunch of toys and balls and other types of things that people had brought her. We're sitting there in the pitch black, dark, with a spirit box going, and they ask, "Lily, are you here?" And all of a sudden, a penny gets thrown at me. It bounces twice and it hits my shoe. The woman with us gets the penny and throws it across the room and says, "Here, Lily, if you were here with us, throw the penny back over here." Nothing happens. Then suddenly on the spirit box, there's a deep voice, obviously not a little girl, and the voice says,
"Why?"
So we're like freaking out. The guy in the group says, "Who was that who just asked why on the spirit box?" Nothing comes through the spirit box, but when I went back to review the digital recorder right after Carl asked who it was, you can hear a little girl say something, and I couldn't make out what she said. It's a distinct little girl's voice. It was a full sentence, and I just cannot make out the words. Then about 15 minutes later, we were leaving that room and heading back towards the break room so we can go to the next floor. Carl asks his girlfriend if she wants to walk down the hallway, and right after he asked her this, that same little girl's voice says,
"Yeah!"
Sweet little voice with excitement in her voice. As soon as I heard that, it sent chills down my back. There were only six of us in the group. We're all adults, no children. It was obviously a little girl's voice. It's pretty crazy. That was the most concrete evidence that we got all night. We had a couple people in the group that saw a little shadow figure through a doorway. I didn't see it personally, but throughout the night, there was a bunch of noises and little shadows. It was definitely worth it. I really want to go back at some point. The money that they get for the tours, they use the money for the building to keep it standing, restorations. So at least the money goes towards a good cause. I'd gladly spend the money to go on another overnight tour. And they also have the option where you can pay $150 a person and get the whole asylum to yourself, a private ghost hunt. I mean, it's an awesome option. And at one point, they were going to tear the asylum down. I think they wanted to turn it into a Walmart or a casino. Then they put it on the National Historic Landmark Registry, so now it's protected forever. Lori and I went one time to the asylum. They have a forensic building in the back where they had the criminally insane patients, people that pled insanity. The absolute worst. We went back there. We didn't have any experiences, but our tour guide said that when she went back there to practice her speech of the history for the tour, she was back there and she got pushed up against the wall and was being choked. She couldn't breathe because she was being choked. I mean, she was terrified. She ran out of the building. So I appreciate Rosalie and Nick sharing their experiences with me when it comes to this asylum. And so it looks like Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, looking it up, it's open for tours during March 29th until November 9th. So a good chunk of the year. On their site, I read this. Historic tours will leave every hour on the hour. Paranormal tours leave every 2 hours. The last 45-minute tour leaves at 5 p.m., and the 90-minute tour leaves at 4 p.m. after we reopen for walking tours on March 29th, 2005. Unquote. And it looks like they're closed on Mondays, but open Tuesday through Sunday, 11:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., with the exception of Saturday opening 2 hours earlier at 9:30 a.m. And I believe I found this on their Facebook page, and this seems really like a fun thing to do, and it's not too far away, that being March 29th, quickly approaching. So this is what it says. March 29th, the wait is over. Join us as we officially reopen the historic Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum for the 2025 season. Explore the halls of one of America's most legendary asylums where history and mystery intertwine. No reservation is needed. Tours are first come, first serve. Just arrive early to claim your spot. Daytime tour options. First floor, north, 45 minutes. This tour offers a glimpse into the maximum security wing of the main hospital, a trip through arts and crafts, and a brief walk across the back campus to learn about auxiliary buildings and architecture. The tour also covers the treatments and lives of patients and staff. The criminally insane tour is 45 minutes. This tour does not take place inside the main hospital and is specific to the forensics building behind the Kirkbride. Learn about the admissions process and hear escape stories from this maximum security building. The Criminally Insane Tour is a supplementary tour. The daytime paranormal tour is 90 minutes. Are you looking for the thrill of the paranormal but not ready for a night experience? Then this is the tour for you. This is a daytime guided tour. You will be taken to four of the hottest spots in the 242,000 square foot asylum. You must stay with your guide. Four floor plus, 90 minutes. This tour covers most of the 130 years that the asylum was in operation, and is one of the most comprehensive history tours offered. Learn about treatments, construction, lives of patients and staff, and see various areas with historic relevance. This tour includes several flights of stairs, the first floor of the medical center, and it's nearly a mile long. There are no elevators. Unquote. So definitely a lot of options to go check out if you're in Weston or near the area or passing through or planning a trip. I recommend checking out this amazing location. And I did not see anything about overnight visits, even though they mention it. So something to look into, because like my cousin said, it's really cool that you get a certain amount of time on each floor. And that really reminds me of Waverly Hills. You know, we got to spend like 2 hours on each floor. They gave us some history, and then we were on our own, and it was fantastic. Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all awesome. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to worry. Just hit up any of those podcast platforms, such as Podcast Republic, Spotify, Blueberry, CastBox. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everybody, for stopping by, and
I will see you next week.